News Radio WJPF, Illinois State Representative Terry Bryant's on the other end of the line. Morning, Terry. How are you, ma'am? Good?
Good morning, Tom. I'm doing great this morning. It's beautiful and just happy to be in Southern Illinois.
Yeah, same here.
Yeah.
The budget, you know, some people have said yay, some said nay. Illinois Policy Institute, I spoke with earlier this morning, their tax researcher says, you know, it's not a balanced budget. You voted yay, and why?
Well, I would argue with them that it is a balanced budget. You know, you can twist and turn and manipulate numbers any way you want to manipulate them, but the fact is, there's about a $300 million surplus in this budget. If anybody would listen to Tom Demmer, who was the budgeteer for the Republican side, he'll tell you that they tried to leave a bit of a cushion in this because there are always some assumptions made in a budget, just like you have at home. And if everything doesn't go right, then, of course, your budget would not be balanced. So those assumptions were padded by what looks like about a $300 million, we'll call it a surplus. We can't really have a surplus because we still have the pension deficit. But it's not a perfect budget, of course, but they never are when you have true negotiations going on. So I would argue that this is probably the best budget that we've seen since I've been there.
And it's a result of having a full year with the new tax increase. That's where this really comes to fruition, we'll call it, having a full year at 30 with that 34% increase.
That's true. And, you know, I would remind folks again that when I came in 2014, the income tax was at 5%. It's at 4.95 right now, even though we did have an increase over what had sunsetted, we're still 0.05% lower than we were in 2014. So we're starting to see that revenue flow in now. The budget includes a pension buyout that is going to, I believe, save the state a lot of money. It has some changes to teachers' pensions, but it also has some really good things in there for Southern Illinois University.
All right. Now, when the pension buyout, I read a story the Associated Press published yesterday, the number of people saying, will this pension buyout work? Because we're counting on about $400-plus million in savings from these pension buyouts.
Well, I don't know what they mean by work, but this was the brainchild here of Representative Batnick and Representative Fortner, two of the people in the legislature that are respected on both sides of the aisle for their knowledge on pensions and budgeting. This is taken from the Missouri model, so we know that there's already a state that it has worked in. They believe that of those that are eligible to take this, about 20% will actually take advantage of that. So it's not something that everyone's going to jump at. It's for those who are in Tier 1, vested, fully vested, and have not yet started taking their retirement. So it's very narrow who's going to be eligible, but we hope it will get 20% of those who are in Tier 1 or Tier 1 eligible out of the system. And when we have more time, I can explain it to you a little bit better, but it's win-win for the taxpayers, the individual, and for the state. There's no downside to this proposal.
When you talked about the $300 million surplus, I looked it up quickly. The Illinois Comptroller website, as of 8 a.m. this morning, June 4th, general funds payable backlog, 7,056,000. $7,056,916.89 something or other. Mm-hmm. So pretty good stack there. But if you got a $300 million surplus, but here's the thing: Mike Boss used to talk to me about this all the time. State of Illinois, we're the worst. We overestimate in how much the revenue we're going to get, and we underestimate the cost of programs. He says between those two, you can really get in a pinch in State of Illinois, because we have a history of doing that.
Well, that's why the approach was taken this year, so that we're not overestimating the revenue and underestimating the spending. If anything, I believe they've overestimated the spending and underestimated the revenue. We certainly underestimated the revenue last year because we ended up with more revenue than we had anticipated. So that's good for us going forward. And also remember on the backlog of bills, when you look at what's on the comptroller's office, there is always going to be a daily backlog of about $5 billion just because in a 30-day cycle, that's what it'll be. So what we're trying to do right now, we didn't get in this mess in one day. We're not going to get out of it in one day. So we have to take small bites at it that really are effective. In this case, I think that our goal is to get right now to about $5 billion. We cut it in one year from $16.5 billion down to the $7 billion that it's at right now.
Yeah, so I said a million a while ago. I shouldn't have said that. $7,056,916,089. I got billions. I'm counting my decimal points here.
No, I knew what you meant. But, yeah, so we have to remember that we've cut let's just round off and say we cut $9 billion out of the backlog in this past year. So I think we're headed in the right direction. We're not there. We got $130 billion in pension debt. So when we're talking about a surplus, we're talking about a one-year budget surplus. And there isn't a surplus, really, because we need to pay down the backlog of bills.
Right.
Remember that in this budget is also, because if you listen to the Policy Institute, they'll say there's no money in this for paying down back debts. Not true, because as a part of all of this, we know that we're going to pay out the oldest bill in the state, which is the back pay to state employees. That's $60 million, $68 million. That is going to be paid. So we know that that's going to happen. And so we're taking little bites as we can.
And that's one of the areas we need to jump in at this point because, Terry, you were unable to vote on that.
Yeah, there was a separate appropriation bill. It's been run a couple times. When I first got to the legislature in late 2014, I was asked to carry that bill, and I was about to sign off on it, and our legal department came and said, you can't carry this bill, and in fact, you can't even vote on it. The law says that a legislator cannot vote in the affirmative on anything that gives you direct personal financial gain. And in this case, you know, I'm retired from the Department of Corrections. I was there in 2011. I'm owed back pay from this bill, so I was not able to vote on that separate appropriation bill. So, but, you know, I argued with a guy who said, you know, that was like something nefarious going on, and I said, dude, seriously, it's my back pay. If I could vote yes, don't you think I would be one of the yes votes? Why would I not vote on a bill for my own back pay if I was allowed to? So it's kind of silly, some of the people that are angry about me not voting on it.
One of the items that I discussed last week with Senator Fowler at the behest of a local mayor was asking about the local government distributive fund. And in fact, in this budget, there's a 5% reduction. And Senator Fowler says we want to do away with the rest of this. But there'll be some local governments that I think that are going to be happy of seeing more of their local taxes return to their communities as a result of the FY19.
Yeah, that's a very big part of this. You know, the legislature took 10% last year, and so that's being reduced. I make sure that I get this right. I believe it was 10% that's now being reduced to 5%, and then the Department of Revenue was keeping 2% of that. They're now only going to keep 1.5%. So local governments should see more this year than they saw last year. But, you know, I'm a little bit angry. I want to call out some of the mayors that have been talking about the money that they lost in that. Let's remember that last year's budget also changed procedurally, that they got 14 payments of LGDF money last year instead of the 12 they had previously gotten. So, in essence, for last year, it should have made them almost whole. And many of the mayors that have been complaining about the cut fail to let people know that they got 14 payments last year instead of 12. So they really did not see much of a reduction at all in their operating dollars. Right. And now they will regularly be getting those 12 payments.
A couple of moments ago, I glossed over this when you mentioned this, because specifically you talked about a lot of good things in there for higher education. Several elected officials also said it's not just higher education, it's education in general. So what can you tell us about education and FY19 and this budget? And before we get into that, because, you know, the governor's schedule this morning, when I checked it, says Governor Rauner enacts FY19 budget legislation, joined by leaders, sponsors, negotiators, Illinois General Assembly at the James R. Thompson Blue Room in Chicago at 10 a.m. this morning. And it says enacts, doesn't say sign. And maybe I'm reading too much into it, but I have a feeling that maybe we'll get some gubernatorial control on this year's budget, but we'll learn about it this morning at 10.
Well, if he does anything other than signing it, it'll be a shock to me.
Okay.
I'll tell you, he has committed to signing the budget. He committed when the negotiations were done. This is the there are people there who've been there for a long time who said this is the first truly negotiated budget that they've ever been a part of. So in the past, you remember when Mike Bost, you know, threw the papers up and all that, the frustration was that often we don't see the budget until 20 minutes before we're going to vote for it. That's been my experience since I got there. This year, we saw a printed copy the morning of. I don't know, we voted on it at like maybe 3 o'clock, but our staff had it for several days, and they were able to analyze it, and we had a seat at the table this time. So both parties and the governor had a seat at the table. It was fully negotiated. As I said, it's not a perfect budget. It's 1,200 pages long. We're going to find things in it that we don't like, but several of the things we do have, there's a commitment last year when we passed the new funding formula for schools. We know we're going to have to put another $5 billion to $7 billion in it to get it fully funded eventually, and we've committed to putting $300 to $350 million new money in it every year. That $300 million, maybe $350 million, is actually in this year's budget. So that commitment was fulfilled. For higher education, we're going to see the university, SIU in particular, is going to get the same dollars that it got last year. So by the end of last year, it was fully funded. And then we're going to see a 2% increase to higher ed. What that means for us in the region is $4 million in new money to SIU in this budget. Part of that budget is changing MAP grants from a one-year approval to a four-year approval. If you're one of those students that gets a MAP grant and you're always wondering, hope I get it next year, well, you're going to be approved for 4 years on MAP. I don't believe there's another state that's doing that. And in addition to that, a new scholarship program that's called Aim High. That's a scholarship that is only for Illinois students who go to Illinois schools. So we're moving in the right direction for higher education.
All right, before we wrap up today, education and SIU and the call for Dunn to step down. The Board of Trustees met last week, had dueling resolutions about whether to split up. The makeup of the board. I think a lot of people, especially in the business community, we're waiting, of course, for the enrollment number for spring enrollment. We know it's not going to be what we hope for. But, you know, there's a lot of attention towards SIU right now and what's next. I don't know that $4 million will salve the wounds that we currently are experiencing there, because some of this has now clearly gotten personal. What's next at SIU, and what are you watching when it comes to, well, we talked about moving forward with the budget. What about them moving forward?
Well, I can tell you that I think it's become very clear that SIU is a better system, is better all the way around Edwardsville, Carbondale, and Springfield when we work together as one system. So I can't say at this point that all of the legislation to split the system is dead, but it's basically dead. I don't see it moving forward this year. We know that Representative Hoffman brings this up about every other year or so, and he's been doing it for about 20 years. I think he sucked in a couple freshmen who didn't know any better into this, and I still believe that the president was working behind the scenes with those legislators to split the system. So although he has apologized for his language in his email, I still have not heard any apology from him in regard to working against the system that he has been hired to lead. And so moving forward, I would say the trustees are doing their job, and that is to make sure that the system remains whole and healthy. They passed three resolutions in the last trustees meeting that said that they are not going to support a split of the system. I'm very positive about many of the things that Chancellor Montemagno is doing right now. I think he's working on some public-private partnerships. They call P3s. I think that's going to be very good for the community. And he has a mindset that also that we are healthier when we work together as a system. So hopefully the Board of Higher Ed is going to do their study. We'll find out if there needs to be a reallocation. If that determination is made, I'll support that. But right now, I believe everybody understands that you don't do that only on student population. There are a lot of factors that go into this: the number of graduate students, the number of doctoral availability for the schools. We have a aviation school, we've got a law school, we've got a medical school. All of those things are going to be factored in. So I'm very positive about SIU going forward.
You know, what's interesting is after you called originally on the House floor for Dunn's resignation, that a number of other state representatives, Severin, Natalie Phelps Finney, have joined the call.
Yeah, Chad Hayes. And I think, you know, again, for me personally, it's not about the language that was used. Sometimes we get, you know, we get angry about something. We use, you know, terminology we shouldn't or whatever. What bothers me is an attempt behind the scenes to split the system. Moving the medical school, that's been lost in all of the conversation. All of these proposals include moving the medical school to Edwardsville. That could cause us to lose the very special research designation that we have in Carbondale. It's not transferable to Edwardsville. There are so many things wrong with the proposal that I wouldn't even be able to do it on a show that's this short.
Right.
So to have the president working against the system, that is more. That's going to take a little bit more than just an apology.
And you're doing a petition too.
I am. I'm doing a petition to keep the system together. And okay. Anybody who wants to join in on that can get on Bryant for Illinois and join in on that petition.
Where do you rest on this death penalty? You've got Jerry Costello's idea. You got the governor's idea. Are you leaning one way or another?
Jerry's idea is only different than the governor's in that he includes firefighters in that, in addition to law enforcement. I've signed on as a co-sponsor of Jerry Costello's. I also signed on as a co-sponsor of Jim Durkin's, which is the exact language of the governor's. I have been a death penalty proponent, have always, my entire life, adult life. I do think that there are some crimes that are, I've used the word heinous, they are so heinous that as a civilization we have to say that you can no longer be a part of the human race. You know, that includes those who do school shootings. It is very narrowly defined. You have to be over 18 years old. You have to have killed more than one person. It has to be, I forgot the exact terminology, but it basically is without a doubt. So
yeah.
You're talking about the people where you're taking the gun out of the person's hand while they've been shooting everyone. There's no question about the fact that the person did it. I used as an example in committee, Old Testament. In the Old Testament, it was by the witness of two people. And honestly, if either of those people under Old Testament law gave false testimony, then they were executed.
Nice.
So I think that we have to use it in a very narrow fashion, but I think that we actually should be using it.
Illinois State Representative Terry Bryant. Terry, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you, Tom. Thanks for having me today.